listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. This show exists to help you build a thriving creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump into today's episode. This episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad. Check out astropad.com to learn more. This week's episode is also sponsored by Wix.com. With Wix, the web is your playground. Start with a blank page and design any website with any layout that you want. Work right on the page with advanced features and sophisticated visual effects. You'll have the freedom to tell your story exactly the way you envisioned it. Go to Wix.com/creativepep to get started today. That's Wix.com/creativepep. Wix, what will you create? Quick big announcement. I just released the Creative Career Path workbook. It's a pocket kind of handbook. It's 5x7, 32 pages. If you love the Creative Career Path series, but you wanted something more tangible to work through with some of these ideas on paper that you can kind of get into, I just released a book with a bunch of prompts and the process kind of laid out all in one book. I'm super, super excited about it. Scout Books helped me make it happen. It's a sponsored item. And I love Scout Books. If you want to make a custom notebook, they do these beautiful screen printed covers. Or you can do something more like what I did, which is more of a full-on book where you get into the interior pages. I love working with them. They're one of my favorite collaborators. And they'll give 15% off to Creative Pep Talk listeners. If you want to check that out, go to scoutbooks.com/creativepeptalk. If you want to go get the Creative Career Path booklet, the handbook for striking the balance between business and art and marketing your work, go check it out at creativepeptalk.com/shop. All right, let's get into today's episode. Today's episode is extremely exciting and special. We have on the show none other than Jenny herself from Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. Listen, you know, if you listen to this show, you know I like to speak in hyperbole. I get really excited about stuff, use extreme language. And because of that, you know, over the years, I've become more sensitive to overhyping things. However, there are a handful of things, maybe five things, I could count them on my hand, the things that I am not afraid to overhype, because I believe there are no words that can capture the brilliance of these things. And one of those things, I kid you not, is Jenny's ice cream. And when I moved to Columbus, Ohio, where Jenny's is based and where it started, I heard everybody's like, oh, you got to try Jenny's if you're going there. And I was like, yeah, all right, ice cream. I get it. I love ice cream. I'm sure it'll be a great time. But when I went there, I was overwhelmed by the pleasant sensory experience between just the way that the whole shop feels. It smells like fresh waffle cones. It's got all these interesting flavors. It's like an adventure for your palate. And I've never, ever tasted ice cream so delicious. I really believe it's the world's best ice cream. And it's growing like wildfire. I'm sure there'll be one near you very soon. If not, I'm sure it's in your local grocery store. Anyway, whether you've tasted it or not, and I highly recommend you figure out how to do so, this interview is going to blow your socks off. And here's why. So you hear me talk about stand-up comedy all the time, about how I think that's like a really pure form of craft and creativity. And I think every creative can learn from stand-up comedy. Well, I think food, cooking, chefs, all of that whole culinary world is another prime example of, you know, an industry of creativity that's so experienced in the world of business. And there's so many giant takeaways that you can take from people in that world that are crushing it. Jenny is crushing it in a totally incredible way that is that I am so fascinated by, and I was thrilled to get to talk to her, and I was desperate to just get to know her story and see what, you know, lessons she had. And her story is so inspiring, and there are so many, there are literal big aha moments in this interview that I'm going to reference many, many times, definitely in the next couple episodes of the podcast, just trying to unpack some of this brilliant stuff. I know you're going to love it. Here she is, the brilliant woman and entrepreneur, Jenny Britton Bauer. I wanted to start by just talking about life before ice cream hits you, before that kind of magical moment. What was life like before that? High school, middle school, childhood? Was it a struggle, or were you always just like crushing it?
Well, I mean, funny, I thought I was crushing it.
Right.
Like, it's funny because I was an introvert. Nobody who knew me would have been like, Jenny was like a young girl of like serious confidence. Nobody would have said that anyway.
Yeah.
All of my teachers would have said, she's very quiet, very reserved, very shy, very patient, very kind, would like to disappear. Right? That's what my teachers would have said about me.
How to describe you these days.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and like, if you knew me and could go a little deeper back then, you wouldn't have said that either. It took me a while to figure that out. But I was like that at school because I hated school. I didn't like to be there. I don't like to feel corralled or like pushed.
Yeah.
At all. And like, it's just, I mean, since I was born that way, like there's never a time when I don't remember. I went to kindergarten. I remember like that's just not for me. I don't like standing in lines and doing what people tell me to do.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for me. And so my way of dealing with that, I think in many ways, was to basically shut down for those hours of the day, which I did all my life in school. Mm-hmm. And then I would go home, and I had an incredibly rich life of making things and reading and exploring. And we moved all the time, so there was always something to do, you know, something new. I mean, I moved almost every year, so... Yeah. You know, seasons would go by, and I would I would have one spring in a house, and so I would be exploring the neighborhood, exploring our yard or whatever for that spring, and then we moved to a different one, and I'd have a new spring and summer and winter to explore over there. And anyway, I just I would always make stuff. I started selling stuff pretty young. I loved making, and so I had a grandmother who was an art teacher. So for me, my whole entire world was this like imaginative world that I lived at school because I was not at school when even my body was there. I was working on all my other stuff, I mean, deeply, and then I would get home and I'd either work on it myself or with my sister, and then often it went out into the neighborhood and other girls would join whatever it was that I was working on, or Julie, who's my sister, and I were working on, whether it was a club or a play or a, you know, an inventory for something we were building or doing, and or a fundraiser or a nonprofit that we were doing for a thing. So for me, and I did this all the way through high school.
Yeah.
So for me, that was what it was always about. It was like, it's like following my curiosity. I was always like, there was always something more interesting to me than what everybody else was doing and what school was. And so I was always figuring that out and like very encouraged to go do that. And very restless about all that.
I'll save you the whole backstory, but my story is pretty much identical to that. And I think the difference maybe between you and I was that I was not really encouraged to do my own thing. So my mom is the artist, but she wasn't around. So I was raised by my stepmom. People that listen to the podcast know the whole sad story, right? But my dad and my stepmom raised me, and they're both type A, corporate, like climbing the ladder. And so to me, the difference was I was interested in all that stuff. If I had an idea to sell something, they were like, why don't you just get a job? Like that,
right.
You know? So, but I totally relate to, you know, being kind of having that knee-jerk reaction to being corralled and waiting in line. And I had a job at a movie theater, and I would feel physically ill. They would make me be a cashier. I would go in that box, and I'm telling my dad, like, I'm ill. I can't stand there and do this. And I can't count this money and do all that crazy stuff.
I would have felt the same way. But I loved working and I loved making money.
Yeah.
Because my family didn't have money. And so for me, money was freedom. And I would, I tried to make money from as early as I could. And so by 12 years old, I was babysitting, I was babysitting like industrially. I mean, I had stacks of cash on my door. But what I would do is I would go buy fabric to make clothes or clothes for dolls or, you know, things that I wanted to do. I go buy art supplies. And now I don't remember where I was going with that, but.
So you're a parent now.
Yeah.
Do you do this? Are you very encouraging of all the extracurricular interests and?
Yeah, I mean, I'm I struggle because I want my kids to stay in the same school.
Yeah.
To have a group of friends that they can feel comfortable around for a long time.
To
learn to build friendships and relationships. Yeah. And luckily, my daughter's in fifth grade and my son is in third grade. And luckily, up to this point, their teachers are in a sort of a new era of teaching in that homework is less of a thing.
Yeah.
And my daughter Greta is getting into more of an age where she's going to start having more homework, but she's also been in a school that taught her these, you know, how to do it and how to stay on top of that. But I struggle a little bit too, because I want them to do their homework and I want them to have that life, but I want to make sure that they have time to breathe and think and do and create. But, you know, I don't keep up with other parents when it comes to like scheduling in sports. Neither one of my kids are particularly good at any one sport.
Yeah.
And in our school district, a lot of kids by now are, and you know, we kind of jump around a little bit, and it's okay. A lot of kids do that, but like we're not scheduled 3 days a week. We're scheduled like 1 day a week, and often it's a writing class, not a sport. So and then the rest of the time, you know, I really do want them to be I mean, even if they're just playing video games, like I am not opposed.
Me neither.
To that.
Yeah.
And I know that that's going against the grain a little bit, but I find these games to be, I'm like sounding like an old lady, these games, to be highly creative.
Me too.
And
inspiring.
Like there is, I mean, besides walking around in nature, which I also believe deeply in, and reading books, of course, which we also do, I think, like, there's just so much wonderful exploration and imagination that goes into that. So anyway, I have a little bit of a different view on some of that than other people.
Yeah, and my experience is the same. And I struggled with homework really bad, and I have kids, and I was really concerned that in elementary school even that they were going to get loaded down with homework, and they haven't been.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a relief, because I just think it's not like they're in a day job where, you know, they need to be doing this stuff 10, 12 hours a day. Like, let them do that mm-hmm. part of the day and then let them go, you know, do their own thing. So,
well, and I'll tell you, like, my daughter writes, like, almost compulsively. Like, she writes volumes weekly.
And
and it's beautiful and wonderful. She writes letters. She writes stories in letter form and other things, too. And it's really, really amazing. But I have a firm belief, because I know this is true about me, that kids are who they're going to be, right? That I didn't grow up to be somebody different. I grew up to be the only person I could have become, which is the only person I ever was.
Right.
I was doing all of the things, and I mean down to the daily details of what I do every day.
The same thing.
After school, every day when I grew up, when I was growing up. And not every kid's like that. Like, my son isn't going to grow up and play video games because he played video games after school every day. I mean, I also watch TV and do other things. But like, there are things that I can look at, definitely in my daughter who's a little older too, but like, those things are what we as parents need to keep allowing our children to have time to do.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that they're doing that they're good at. Like, if they're good at, like, I was really good at bringing people together, like, really, like, connecting people and mm-hmm. then creating projects and doing them. And, like, that's exactly what I'm doing now. And so, I don't know, as a parent, it's like, those are the things that I'm on the lookout for.
Yeah.
Is so what are those things that they're already good at? Who are they?
Yes.
And, like, how can I
stewarding
not
that.
Squash that?
Yes. Yeah, totally. I completely agree. I think it's like the thing I'd be most concerned about is trying to cultivate something that isn't there, or trying to erase something that's there or not give space
And
for
people
it.
Do that. And I think when you overschedule your kids, you're doing that. You're pushing them into something, and you're praising them for being what you want them to be or what you expect from them, and often not giving them the stage or the place to find out what that is, explore it, and then become it, and then you know, do it, you know.
And I think my, like, so, yeah, so I have three kids, and I feel like the best part and the most encouraging I can be with three kids is seeing what's there. That's like the most fun thing, because they do come out so fully formed. In their DNA, there's a wired individual.
Which is also why, I mean, I will never judge another parent. Like, I say all this stuff because I'm judgmental of myself.
Right. Yeah.
And I know what I don't want to be. That isn't saying that, like, I'm looking at some specific human being who's doing that.
Yeah.
Because I know how, and my kid, my sister has children who are so different from mine, and they're much more sporty, and like, that's their thing. I know that now, like you do too, and I know that parents find that in their kids, and the best parents are the ones that continue to feed the things that their kids are showing interest for or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
but the last thing on earth I want to do is like act like I know all the answers either, because kids are so different.
Yes.
I mean, just like human, just like grown ups are.
I think my parents, the struggle was is that they both have the exact same path to success, and so that's the only one that they knew. And everything about me was like a weird anomaly, or frightened them because it was like my mom. So they're like, he's gonna be like her. We gotta get this out of him. This creative spark. We gotta like crush this thing because it is gonna lead to craziness. So, but yeah. So, okay. Real quick before we move on from that, were there things about that season that were actual struggles, pain, like things that were like genuinely hard for you?
Oh, as a kid?
Yeah, just before you will... get the call to ice cream, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I had not an easy childhood. I mean, I managed through, and I went my direction, and there are those incredible, like, I had my world, but I wasn't just, of course, as any kid, I wasn't just in my world, right? I was in my parents' world.
Yeah.
And that was not a good scenario. They struggled deeply and in every way imaginable. And I as all kids do, found my way with my sister, and I was lucky to have her. And, you know, and it was up and down and in and out. And eventually we absolutely 100% lost everything. I mean, everything fell apart. And so, more than once. And so by the time I was, 17 or 18 was really pretty much, I mean, for all intents and purposes, on my own.
Yeah. Were you afraid, like, for your future, for what you were gonna do?
You know what I was afraid of? I was afraid of becoming like them.
Yeah, right.
So I will tell you, I was afraid that if I didn't get control of my life, that I would live this backward life, and not be able to get out of it.
Yep.
And I look to that and think that's what propelled me. And I feel the same.
That was
my
your motivation.
Sister feels the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, my sister's like, I mean, she walked out of high school. Neither of us were expected really to graduate or even like go to college or anything.
Yeah.
Julie walked out of high school with some F-bombs to her teacher.
Right.
Got her GED. Yeah, that teacher then failed her, which meant she couldn't get her degree. And like, got her GED, and now she's like a coder for National Defense. I mean, she's an amazing human being doing amazing things. But I think because of that, you know, I see kids who come from places like where I came from, and like I have, my parents are good people, but it was tough for them. Mm. And I see people who come from places like me where my mom couldn't afford gas sometimes, we'd have lights turned off, all these things, you know, were so hard for her. And and I think like what an advantage in some ways it is to have that to like compare yourself to, and that you don't have anything to lose.
Yep.
Starting out in life with nothing to lose and no parents who expect things from you. I didn't take the SATs. I thought that was baloney.
Yeah.
Is actually like, I don't know. It's maybe an advantage, and maybe it's something that's it certainly was for me.
And it depends how you're wired and all that kind of stuff, because for some people they take that same situation and do something completely different. But,
just like one little thing in their life might have put them on a different path, right? Somebody made them feel sorry for themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of the opposite.
Yeah.
Somebody gave me the book. I mean, it's so funny, but it was Wayne Dyer, you know, the doctor guy or whatever he is, that he like sometimes speaks on PBS, but he's like a super help guru guy, self-help guy.
Yeah.
Somebody gave me one of his books early on, and I read it, and I was probably like 19, and I read it, and the one takeaway from that book was never say, why me?
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered like during so many of the different struggles that we had as a family, like, you know, my mom just kind of giving up and like, this is just happening to me instead of that I have power in it. And from that moment on, that was a huge turning point for me. I was like, whatever I face, I will own.
Yep.
And you'll whatever it is, I will just walk toward it instead of away from it, because otherwise I will live a life of fear, in fear.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's incredible. So so I know that you had a lot of things going on, because you went to OSU for art, and you also had an interest in like perfume and essential oils and all this. But how does ice cream happen? Could you just tell that story?
Yeah, I mean, I got into Ohio State because I didn't get in because I didn't do my SATs and I got straight D's in high school because I was working and doing other things and I had a good time. So I wrote Ohio State a letter and said I was working and doing a lot of other things. And then they were like, oh, well, that's cool. So you can come. And it was great. So they let me in, which was awesome.
Look, I was doing stuff, all right? I didn't have time to do school.
That's exactly what I basically said.
That's awesome.
But they let me in, which was awesome. So I met a lot of great people. I was really inspired there. I love Ohio State so much because it is such a massive university with so many things to do. I took one class all on vampires and vampire, you know, legend and mythology or whatever. Yeah. And I took the classics and I took a lot of art history and I took a lot of fine arts. But of course, like, I'm, you know, your career counselor and everybody else in your life is like, but what are you going to do? Like, when are you going to focus? Because you should really get a degree while you're here. And like, then you got to do a career and all this stuff. And like, and so I was thinking about that. I was working at a pastry shop tour, a bakery, and thinking like, maybe I should, you know, I like doing things. I like to be active. I like to physically do physical labor.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking maybe I should be a pastry chef, and I couldn't afford pastry school. That was a whole different thing. You had to get, not only afford the school, but you have to get to New York for 6 months and like afford to stay there. And like, right. I was on loans and grants to go to Ohio State, so that wasn't going to work. And then I was, I had a friend who worked in the chemistry department. He brought me some like little vials of whatever compound that had a scent. It's like spearmint, or one other one had wintergreen, another one. And I started to realize that I was like really into my sense of smell. And then I started to look back at my childhood, where we had 10 acres of forest land that we cultivated and like did art in. And I was very connected to the smells of the forest, like so connected that like, and my sister's got a really strong sense of smell as well. And we used to always talk about that. And I was like, I think I could be a perfumer. Like, I think I would actually be a really good
nose. Are you pretty sensory just generally?
Very.
Yeah.
And in particular, I'm connected to my sense of smell. The odd thing was at the time, and this is just how life works, you know, you get these like signs or whatever, things just cross over, things that you're interested in, you notice them. At Ohio, or at the Wexner Center, there was one artist that was a part of an exhibition they had going on, and the art was these giant vases, like 4 feet tall, that you would take the lid off and smell what was inside.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I was thinking about scent at the time. I was thinking about art and how I was going to find a career in art, thinking about, you know, perfume, and I was thinking about pastry, and then I saw that, and I was like, no, I mean, art, scent really truly can be art, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So on a whim one day, this is probably a couple months later, a couple years later, I mean, I started collecting essential oils and making and blending them. And I was blending essential oils and scents, not just essential oils, but into scents that would remind me of childhood.
Yeah.
Just trying to mimic those,
yeah,
which was kind
cool.
of fun, and then making perfumes for people. And then one day I had this, you know, I had a drawer of full of essential oils in different scents, and I had this idea to mix them into ice cream, because when you're a perfumer, you either use high proof alcohol, which I would have to drive to Kentucky to get, or you use oil that is solid at room temperature but melts on contact with your body, and not all fat is like that. I mean, cocoa butter is a great example of it being not like that.
Yep.
If you have a cocoa butter lip balm, like, it doesn't spread on your lip very easily, but coconut oil does.
Okay.
And so different oils have different melting points, and ice cream and butterfat, which is the fat that's in milk, actually happens to be perfect for that.
Right.
So that's the long story of how I get into that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing ever.
And there's a lot of interesting things that are happening there. And one of the things I'm trying to do on this podcast, so I'd say every two or three episodes is an interview, but most of them are monologues where I'm just kind of talking through different ideas about finding your path as a creative person. And two things that you kind of said there, one was noticing this thing about you, which is like a self-discovery thing about, oh, I'm like really obsessed with my sense of smell, and like cataloging that away of like, okay, this is a thing that I'm gonna carry on to something else. And then another moment you had is like, oh, and this can be art. So for me, even podcasting and talking, I was already a full-time illustrator when that kind of came to me, but I realized, I love to talk, I talk like crazy. To me, that's like if I was a woodchuck who chucks wood, I'm a talker who talks. That's what I do.
Yes.
I'm gonna talk like crazy. And then so that was a discovery, but then another discovery was, Oh, and that can be art. Like, there's a way.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. You say it that way, too, because I always talk about, like, well, there were these, like, ice creams, and my style of ice cream is, like, where my interests at the time collided. And my style has changed over the years a little bit, but, like, all based on this one thing where it was, like, I was doing the things that interested me that I was, like, compelled to do, that I just, like...
You do that.
I was
that's
drawn magnetically to those things. And then I found where... I could be of use to someone else, right?
This is my thing. Yes. I'm so obsessed with it. I'm doing a giant series about finding your thing and finding who needs it or how they need. How does that thing serve somebody else?
Yep.
When you find that sweet spot, that is the transcendent moment.
That's all it is. And
yes.
If we allow our kids to have the broadest experience, to become the people that they are, you know what
yes.
I mean?
To cultivate what they've got. Yeah.
Yeah, and to give them experiences that feed that, and also that open them to new things too. But with you know, that then they become people, and what they do in their lives is so powerful for
they become a rare
America
thing.
And the world.
They become a rarity
yeah.
when they gather these experiences mixed with their DNA.
Because
they become this unique thing that isn't everywhere.
And the most important part of that, the thing that. That is the most important part of that equation is that, you know, it used to be that we would wake up in the morning as farmers and go out and farm because we would starve if we didn't, right? And now we don't have that. We wake up and we get in the car and we go to work and we go to sleep and we wake up and get in the car and go to sleep. But what we don't have is that intense motivation.
The meaning of it.
The meaning of it, the feeling, the connectedness of it. And so when we, so this is a way to do that, you know?
Yes.
Getting because nothing drives you more than the thing that you are uniquely suited to do and the thing that you can then become better than anyone else.
The significance
or be
that,
in the top percent, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and if you force somebody to do something that they're not into and, you know, that... So this is this is how we should be building America,
yeah.
You know?
Yes, I talk about, you know, getting obsessed with understanding your DNA, understanding your experience, understanding who you are, what you've got... And then figuring out how to plug that into a place that's where that's needed.
And then I'll just add, like, but don't be too serious about it. Like, just do it.
Have some fun and do it.
Like, just start now. If you're 8 years old,
yes,
do what you want to do.
Yes.
Like, do whatever you want to do. Now, you can't do that all day long, but you can do it. And you do have to get smart. Like, you do have to go to school and learn and all of that stuff. But go do what you want to do. If you're 65 years old, just do what you want to do. Like, don't go searching.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always say flavor surrounds you. People ask me a lot of times, like, where do you come up with ideas for flavors? And the funny thing is they ask me that because they're from New York City or they're from LA or they're from Chicago or they're from Miami or whatever it is. And they believe
that there's no flavors
like,
here
how
in Columbus.
How do you find all of these like amazing things in Columbus? And this is they don't say that so
partially
much anymore.
They think that we live in huts in Columbus.
But especially 10 years ago. Especially 10 years ago. And like, how are you doing all these amazing things? And I'm like, flavor surrounds you, right? So you could go anywhere and find, like, flavor and find something. And the idea for me is, like, just open your eyes and do something.
Yeah.
Start with what you have, because it's actually a lot more than what you think.
Yeah.
And that same thing is true with flavor. I mean, you can walk into any library and find an idea for a flavor. Or, you know, walk through, I mean, I don't even, anywhere, there's an idea for a flavor. Every single thing on Earth has a history to it that you can find a flavor to that you have something connected to that. That's great. But the same is true about action. It's like, just don't wait for things to be perfect or for inspiration to find you. Find it in front of you, right?
Yeah.
Just open your eyes and do something.
Get started making stuff stay.
But it should be something that you are really truly curious about.
And so, one of the things I always think about is I will talk to a lot of people that are stuck and they'll tell me, oh, I have these very contradictory interests. I've got, whatever it is. And I always say, anytime you're seeing a contradiction, it's like a moment for creativity. There's a moment to build a bridge. And so for you, how did the sense of smell, aromas, all that, and art turn into ice cream? Because there's
And also, like, speaking of contradictory, I mean, it's like chemistry and art. I mean, it's ice cream is a deep, I mean, it's science, but it's like specific chemistry. And but also ice cream is agriculture.
Mm.
And like, it's a really difficult, set. Like milk is a really difficult world to unravel and like actually get milk that you want to use and like, or you know, the best milk or whatever. I mean, it's like not like strawberries. So agriculture is a huge part of it too. So there's a lot of this, like, if you want it, like all of these overlapping weird things that don't seem like they're related, right? Yeah. How is art and artists and artsy shit related to farming? Do you know what I mean? And like, well, we need that to tell our story. We need science to be able to tell our story. And also scientists need artists to tell stories too. And like, but we all like kind of, you know, you find that intersection or whatever, where all those things work together too.
Yep. And so how did that come into one thing?
It's funny because for me, I started out like thinking that I was an ice cream artist. I mean, I don't know how exactly, it wasn't quite thinking about it, but when I look back on it, I think like, it was really funny. Like, I really thought that people would care about like my ice cream art.
I have a question about that. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
I mean to cut you off, but I one of the things I try to get people to think about, you know what? Can I put a pin in that? And
yeah.
We'll go, because I don't want to, I'm going to way off course us there, but if we could go to, you just started making ice cream, that was, you know, I think I heard somewhere that you had done it for a party or something. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I just started making like ice cream all the time, and people, and I was like 21, 22 years old.
You were working at a bakery, so you're already like cooking and stuff like that, right?
And yeah. And I was like, I just started making ice creams and taking the party, and people started to refer to me as the ice cream girl, and like it just became my thing, and that was very encouraging, right? So now I've become known for it, which is another step to, you know, Jedi or whatever.
Yeah.
Is like when people start to get behind you and support you, like, then it starts to feed, you know, like then you're sort of trying to live up to that and blow their minds again or whatever, which is a great cycle to get into with your friends.
Absolutely.
When people know you for something. And then, and
just
also
the fun,
it's
of
also
like trying to surprise your friends and get them excited.
But
and,
like also it's important as a friend to identify when your friend is doing that and then supporting them and joking with them about it and calling them the ice cream girl. And what are you bringing now?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's
totally
an important role for friends to do, and the same thing is true about getting people into politics. You know what I mean? We gotta encourage people who are good at things to do things. But anyway,
my sister should go into politics.
Mine too.
Like, go, do it. And she's like,
but that's what
perfect.
We have to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the same thing is true for me when I was starting out. I had friends encouraging me, which was great and inspiring, and I just kept trying to live up to, you know, that and going to parties or whatever. But you know, a few months later, I had convinced a friend to convince her family to put up some money, and then she and I went into business together. And
did you, when you first made ice cream and you're combining smells and all this stuff, was it like a magical call to adventure? Did you feel it like, this is weird, like something's happening?
It was like, I think that because I had been pursuing the things that I wanted to do and deeply enough that I knew them well, I knew art was about in so many ways telling stories or the stories in front of me and that and transporting people, and I knew that scent was also transportive in its own way, and like with memory association, all that stuff. And I knew, and I'd always been an entrepreneur since I was a kid, so I think I knew I was going to be my own boss, and like I was going to have a business at some point. And then because of pastry, I was learning so much in the kitchen about how ingredients work together and all of that. And because I was doing all of those things, the moment that I made the first ice cream, and then immediately, and really all I did was buy ice cream and mush scent into it. So I wasn't even interested in actually making the ice cream at that point. But the moment I took the bite and I realized that that ice cream is like the perfect carrier of scent. In fact, the least expensive vanilla ice cream you can buy, the cheapest, most economic brand, right, with a completely synthetic vanilla, you could think of, and at that moment I realized, is an edible perfume.
Right.
Because vanilla bean is from a flower, and just like rose petal and all of those other ones too. And that there are so many other flowers and herbs and spices that we haven't had the chance to explore that are really gorgeous that ought to be just as popular as vanilla. So in that moment,
that's like a massive aha moment.
It was
crazy.
It was truly like the sky opened up. And that moment was just like, I envisioned my future, which is exactly what I'm doing now. Like, and I have never wavered from that course.
Man, that is amazing. And I think it's so, I try to encourage people, if not everybody is in a moment where they're in their life where that moment has happened to them yet. But I always encourage them, either if it has happened to you, to pay attention to it and get, you know, really give it space and do it, or keep looking out for it.
One thing that discourages people from seeing the moment when it's in front of
you
is all of your obligations in the world.
Yeah.
And including all of your relationships, because I have to just, I mean, I, like, again, I didn't have a lot of obligations. I didn't have, you know, people who expected a lot from me.
But you were in college.
I was in college, and I didn't have, like, you know, it wasn't like anybody expected me even to get a degree, or certainly, you know, whatever. Right. But the other thing was that I had, and then again, I had friends and people in my life that encouraged that. So that was really important. But, like, people, if you don't have that, it becomes really difficult. You can't do it, right? Because it is such an uphill battle outside of that small circle that you've got.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
Everybody that you know don't know very well is going to discourage you 100%. So,
yeah.
So look, I really do think that if you have, we all have to build and be a part of both sides of the equation of this, an inner circle that's supportive. We have to be the supporters. We have to lift up our friends when they have these ideas and epiphanies or whatever. And then we have to build our inner circle network to be supporters too, because that, I think, is the worst thing, because we can have these moments of, like, this would be amazing, I can see this, and then not do anything about it because you're afraid to offend somebody, or somebody, you know, it's going to be a conflict with somebody or something in your life.
So whether you've had that moment or not, a key part of it is surrounding yourself with people that are going to support you and get excited about your moments and all that.
Yeah, like, you don't have to tell them, like, I'm going to, which I didn't, believe me, at the time, I wasn't like, I'm going to create a company that's going to set the standard for American ice cream for generations to come.
Yeah.
Like, I had that idea. I didn't tell everybody that, right?
Yeah,
I was just like, I'm
going
to make amazing ice creams. I'm going to get really good at this, right?
Yep.
And so you don't have to tell everybody everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But just give them enough to encourage you.
Yeah. Quick shout out to our sponsors. Go check out AstroPad. If you want to be able to draw on your iPad in your favorite programs like Photoshop and Illustrator, there's not a better way to do it. I use AstroPad all the time for my professional work. I'm a massive fan. I actually found them, got obsessed with it, started using it full time in my work, and that's why I approached them to be a sponsor on the show. And ever since then, it's been a match made in heaven. I love the people over there. They are tirelessly working on improving it, making it great for people like you and me to do our creative work on our iPad. Go check it out at astropad.com to learn more. Also, a little shout out to Wix.com. Wix is a tool that allows you to make a custom website for your portfolio, for your work, and I really think you got to do that to be taken seriously. Here's what I love about Wix. They are investing deeply into the creative world, into people like me, working with me, listening to what I want in my portfolio and what I would want to be able to do to display my work. And they're doing that across the board with all kinds of creatives to make the best tools for presenting your work online. And that just makes me super excited to be involved with them and for them to be involved in our podcast. Go check out wix.com/creativepep to get started. That's wix.com/creativepep. Thanks, Wix.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks from this point on that you went and started Ginny's Ice Cream and it was magical, but that's not what happened. You had a different business first.
I did. I had a business that I called Scream Ice Cream. And it was, you know, I quit art school to do it. I actually literally walked out of art class, figure drawing class, to go start that business and make ice cream. And
you remember walking out of a particular class?
Well, it's funny. It's an even better story because those classes, as you probably know, are like 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And so, like, I always like drawing really big. I like, especially figure drawing class. So I like to like stand and draw. And I like, so I like round people because it's, you know, that's the, you know, your arm likes to do round things.
I like curve. Yeah.
Me
when
too.
I'm drawing, I like the curve. Like I don't like the lanky drawing. It doesn't feel as nice to
draw. Well, this is what happens. So I know you understand this.
Okay.
The lanky, beautiful, but very tall, slim model walked in. And like, she was so cool too. She like rode a motorcycle and she like would walk in. She was really beautiful. I see her around town a lot. So,
yeah.
And I was just like, I had never could get a good drawing of her.
Right.
And because it was more angular, and I just, you know, I'm not that good at it. So I like just drawing round. I think you can hide things better,
right.
Honestly.
Maybe
but
that's
anyway,
why I like to draw.
I know, because it's like your arm naturally goes to those curves, but so I was just like, I can't. And I was really excited to get home and make ice cream. And so I was like, I can't sit here for 3 hours trying to work out the angles of this beautiful person. Like when I really just want to go home and make ice cream.
Yeah.
And it was portfolio week and I had all of my supplies there or whatever. And like, I just got up off the drawing horse and walked out, went home. I think I had to ride my bike home and I made ice cream and I never went back. And like my professor, her name was Pia, she was German, found me later at the North Market where I had my first business screen.
Yeah.
And she was like, do you want that portfolio back? And it was right. The best stuff I had ever done.
Yeah.
I totally wish I had it now. I mean, it was the best I ever was at art and illustration. And I was like, no, I don't need it.
But I mean, that's like a real leaving home moment where you're like, you got up, you left, and you're like, I'm done with that. I'm going on the journey. I'm doing it. Yeah. And so what? Why is Scream not here instead of Jenny's?
Well, so I walked, walking out of art school and going and starting a business, like first of all, I love service. I was always very, very good at service. I got my first jobs when I was like 15 and I just excelled at service and I love that so much. But for whatever reason at Scream, even though I love putting emphasis on others and I love service and hospitality and all that, I wasn't able to figure out that what I thought I was doing was like making items that people would love. The adventure would be in coming in and seeing what I had today.
Right.
And then I could make something different tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it didn't occur to me, even though I love service and even though I love people and pleasing people, that really isn't why people go to businesses.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe galleries.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But to give me their money, I have to create something that's a craveable reason to return. It took me a long time to figure that out. And so Scream was really always about whatever was new, whatever I was inspired by, whatever I felt like making that day. And very focused on me, honestly, even though I didn't see it that way at the time necessarily. I thought it was a really good idea. So we closed Scream. And you know, the thing is, Prom, of course, is like if you brought your friends, but you had salty caramel, which was a flavor that I knew everyone loved and everyone begged me for all the time. And I was just like, yeah, that's who I am. That's what I do. I just make other flavors. You know, I make that sometimes and I sometimes don't. It was just a big letdown. You know, and I didn't realize that until after I closed Scream. And we weren't that busy. By the end, I was better at making ice cream. And like, you know, we had a small following, but we weren't that busy. We weren't really busy enough to say that it was a successful business. We were paying our bills. And I made $638 a month take home for 4 years, which is not very much to live off of. And so I'd kind of burned out. But it took me, after I closed Scream, to go to another business that I was expecting to get something. It was a scone at a coffee shop that I really loved, and I was there on a Saturday morning, and they didn't have it, and they also didn't care that they didn't have it.
Yep.
And I was like, you do know that that's the only reason I'm here.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I don't care about anything else you guys do. I don't care about your atmosphere. I don't care about your coffee. I don't care anything
else. Your art.
I care only about this orange scone that you had that's unique and different in the world, and that's what I want. And then I realized that that was what I was doing to every customer at Scream. And so then, immediately, this is like 6 months after we closed Scream, I started writing a business plan, because now I had that worked out. Like, I figured out that you have to create something that's really craveable, that's really truly beautiful, that the world really does actually need.
That's for them.
That's for other people. And I was off and running.
So I'd love to come camp right here for a second, because this is the majority of my podcast is talking to creative people who want a career. So it's not just people that want to make art. It's people that want to make a living doing this. And this is the biggest leap that I feel like I had to make in my own journey, and other people have to make too, is I talk about it. I can almost only explain things in analogy. I don't know why, but I just can't. I don't know how to talk normal. But I think of art as the ring in Lord of the Rings. And it's like, it's art is this romantic thing. It's a beautiful thing. It'll give you that depth of meaning in your life and like in your work. So you're like really all in on it, but you can't put the ring on all the time. Like you can't just go all, you will lose yourself in your own precious art and you will never really be able to thrive as a business when it's all about you and your art. And it sounds like that's kind of what happened. Is that right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does make sense. And And there is this idea that there's this like pure art out there. And yeah. I think artists and I think people who write also search for that. But I don't know if that really does exist, because you're always influenced by what other people are saying about you. Yeah. And what other people, you know, and a lot of times that is like, you are a genius, you're amazing, you're brilliant, you're, I love this, or whatever, right?
You,
yeah. Because, yeah. And like as artists and creators or whatever, partly because nobody wants to say something negative. I mean,
right.
Right. But also like partly because like being in the creative world, and there are fewer of us than there are other kinds of, you know,
yeah, yeah,
so you get that yeah. all the time. Yeah. And it's easy to start believing that, or it's easy to start thinking like I can, like I just need to focus on my art and keep doing it, and really truly go the wrong direction.
Totally.
And it's almost like until you get really in tune with like this, I don't know, the other side of it. It's like, I don't know how to explain that, but for me, I had to go through crisis to get there. But like getting to the other side of it, where it's like so, so simple and focused on the things you really, truly, truly care about and literally nothing else.
Yep.
And can block all that stuff out. Can you get to like truly making something really beautiful and worthwhile? And it's weird. Like, so anyway, like,
well, so what were you going to say?
Sorry. I don't know.
What, like, for instance, even when it comes down to someone following you on your Instagram, like, I think artists get into this thing where they think those people are following because they're like, isn't that person just amazing? I want to go celebrate that person. When 9 times out of 10, they're following you because of what they get from you, whether that's mm-hmm. how they build their identity, or, you know, what it says about them, or what, you know, what your art does for them. But it's not because they're just like, I just want to worship you and celebrate you as a person. It's a two-way street. And I also think it's
and
really
so is
weird.
Entrepreneurship. That's yeah. It's that two-way conversation. Everything is. And I feel like art can sometimes feel like it's one-sided, and it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even like this idea of there's a pure art out there that's like just me creating.
Yeah.
And I just don't think, I'm sure there is somebody out there who gets art in a different plane than I am on or ever will be, but like I just don't, I think that everything is related deeply to humanity and
so we're social animals,
yeah.
right? So like
yep.
where, and the other thing I think about is all the time is that this is one of those weird myths that I think hurts artists, like in any other, you know, not just business, but any plane of life, where is this other place where what's most pure is when you're most selfish? Like, you know, when you're most like, you're just doing it for you, don't do it for anybody else. And I always think like, there's no other place in life and there's no other business plan where you go in, you're like, I want to be a thriving business and it's all about me. It's about me serving myself. And I was thinking,
right.
How can, yeah, that's such a weird thing that
but,
has become
so
such.
Like, there's also, so like just kind of related to that or like just aside for that is too, like I do think about like what compels me is like, it's like a sort of empathy, I guess, but it's like a different kind of empathy. It's empathy, but it's like almost like, it's the golden rule, basically. It's like, you know, I don't attempt to figure out what somebody else wants.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
But I do try to figure out what I want, and I think that other people, you know what I mean?
It's
like,
scratching
I think
your
that
own
if
itch.
I do something that I, yeah. And like,
and even
I,
you
yeah.
did that. Your lesson came from that because you were going through this thing where like, what do I want to do today? I just want to make something new every day, and that's what I want to do. So that's me being true. But you found another layer of what you really want when you were going to get that scone because you're mm-hmm. like, well, but what I want from a business is for them to have their greatest hits every time, so that I can rely
yeah,
on
yeah, and
what
like
I'm getting
thinking
from them.
Of, like wanting to make people feel good is a thing, but
yeah.
it's a weird thing that. That in so many ways, if we just live up to our own standards
yeah.
and work really hard to continue to constantly tweak that, never rest on your laurels, like that's all you have to do. It's pure. It's very pure in a way
yeah.
to try to do that. And even though it is complicated because it's not
yeah, it's
just
complicated.
It's yeah. It's not just, you know, making whatever you want today. I mean, it's really putting some thought into like what does the world need for me today?
Yeah.
You know, and what could I do that would, I don't know.
And so, okay, so this seems like this was kind of the moment where you pull the sword from the stone when you realize, like...
You are a fantasy and sci-fi person, so am I.
Good, okay.
That is, like, exactly how, like, I'm like... I don't, not a day goes by where I'm not like pulling lessons from the fantasy that's and what sci-fi
I,
world.
I, that's how I understand life. Mm-hmm. I don't
Me
know
too.
Why, but
it's my entire approach. Like I'm like, I will way. Do a whole, I don't know, I could do a TED talk on leadership lessons from fantasy sci-fi. I think it's only, that's like where I go.
Yeah, that me too. Like my whole, my, you know, big talk where I tell my story and my main like principles all kind of follow the, this kind of path, and it's a fantastical path. I always say it's like Zelda. If your creative career was Zelda, this podcast is your walkthrough. Like it's not your cheats, but it'll help you get through the path and find the sword and
it's all so that great. Kind of and yeah, that's so great. I love it. So, I love all of, yeah.
So you, so, this moment where you're like, you know, they want salty, caramel ice cream, like every time they, this is kind of the, a breakthrough moment and you start writing the plan and you open up and that's where.
Yeah. And I open up again in the North Market, which means that I had to really beg them to give me another shot.
Yeah.
Which meant that I had to get a job at the market. I had to quit my other job, get a job at the market,
right,
so that I could show that I and dress really nicely every time I was there and treat everybody really well, make a lot of friends and like, you know, work it, own it. You know, I think like half the time, if you want to do something or work for somebody or get to know somebody or like get a mentor or like whatever, you just go hang out where they're at.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
like I can't
totally.
Tell you how many
be
people
there.
We've hired
be around those
simply
people.
Because they're just at our shop all the time.
Yes.
You just go stand by them. And that was like, I mean, that's like half of the thing or
yes.
whatever. And if they say no once, you'd be like, well, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And
absolutely.
It's like another year goes by and you're like, we're still here.
Yep. Are and, you around yeah. those people? Are you there? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. You yes. just don't, you don't say, you know, you don't take no for an answer.
Yep.
And
people that say, I want to be an illustrator. I'm like, well, you know,
what are you doing
are you hanging
right
out with?
Now?
Who are you connecting with? Who are you trying to, you know, do you know any illustrators? No. Have you ever tried to meet any? No.
Same with chefs. Like, yeah. go stand by it. Just go figure out how to be as close to a chef as you can.
There's that osmosis. Mm-hmm. There's no greater education. It changes
no.
who you are fundamentally.
And honestly, what, yeah. you don't need to go to school to do any of this.
No.
Go find somebody you think is doing something really great and just hang out wherever they are.
And it will change you.
Yeah.
In a way
and
that
do a really
know.
Good job.
Yep.
And eventually, if you're earning it, they'll pay attention to you. If you earn it... But that was my life then. Like, so I closed Scream and I wanted to open Jenny's and I had was writing a business plan. I was actually selling ice cream out of my house.
Yeah.
So I was bringing ice cream to the market. I threw a party and I would give out invitations and like I had an ice cream party and just in 2001 and like, I mean, I just was there all the time.
Yep.
To get them to change their mind, which of course eventually they did. Like I was not, there was not going to be a no.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is we're lucky in Columbus that we have the market.
True.
There's no way this business would have started as a freestanding location.
Yeah.
It cost $40,000 to start Jenny's. I mean, it cost $1,200 to start it in a way because that was my ice cream machine at home. And then once we did that, we were able to get the loan because we were proving some sales. I mean, that was fun.
Yeah.
And then $40,000, what later we, you know, we get in the market, but it would have cost $250,000 to open with a door on Main Street or High Street, you know. And
do you
it
think
just
that
work.
It's kind of, I never even really thought about it. I was just, I talked to my wife. all the time about why does Columbus have the best food? And do you think it's almost like an incubator for mm-hmm. for food?
I think it is, but I also like I think that this is a city of entrepreneurship. I mean, this
True.
City, it's entrepreneurs, but it's also like entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs and people helping entrepreneurs and people helping each other. This like, you know, I think like, you know, I don't really think Columbus is the Midwest because I'm actually from the Midwest. I'm from the middle of Illinois, Peoria.
Right.
And it's just different there, and I love it there. But the Midwest has a reputation for being nice, just nice.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
great, and that's fine. And I think Columbus is a nice place too. But I mean, full of nice people. But I think that we have like one little extra helping of something with that, like that we are actually helpful.
Mm.
To be helpful is to be nice and nosy,
mm.
right? It's
yeah.
like you're in somebody's way. Like, what are you doing? Like you go sit at a bar in Columbus. I used to do this all the time when I was younger and didn't mind, you know, I would just go sit at a bar after work or whatever and you make friends.
Mm.
Like, that's just not the way it is. So I travel all the time. It's not the same way in other cities.
No. Yeah.
Not so much.
Mm-hmm. It is very unique. So I've lived all over the place and we've lived here for 3 years and I'm in this constant place where I don't want to be, where I'm on the coast visiting, doing talks and stuff like that, and I'm like, you know, I turn into that person that you don't want to be, which is like, no, you don't understand.
Yes,
go to
I
Columbus.
Know.
Go check it out. You won't believe
and also,
what it's
like. I don't care what your opinion is about Columbus.
True. Yeah.
In
totally.
A way, it's like I do the same thing, and
yeah.
it's like, either people get it already and they know and they love it, because there are so
true.
Many
everyone that
Columbus.
Visits here, yeah, they
and
know.
There are so many Ohioans, like there are more Ohioans
and
outside of Ohio.
Its own thing. It's a mm-hmm. breed all yeah. All its
but
own.
Like the weird thing about Columbus, now we're turning Columbus, but I really do think it's true. Like we don't have that sort of navigable waterway. We were never a big city. We were not St. Louis, Cleveland, Cincinnati.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Like those big industrial cities, we never were that. So our future, our history is in our future.
It's unwritten. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and even though we do have an amazing history, and you know, Ohio was the original Wild West, that our founding fathers saw this as an incredible experiment because Ohio was the first state that was not a colony, that had never been a colony.
Right.
So through Marietta and like the Ohio, over the Ohio River versus under the Ohio River and all this stuff, like there's an incredible history here of the people who came to Ohio.
Yeah.
And then became us, and then of course the people who went westward. But nevertheless, Columbus as a city really hasn't had a everybody here. You know, we have great bones. We have an incredible group of people who've been working on the city for a long time. That we can link into, and it's because of them that we have this bright future ahead of us. And I feel like everybody here knows that our history is being written right now.
It is a like a bustling,
yeah.
Like,
and if you don't come here
time.
Unless you want to work on it,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas you go to Brooklyn because it's already done.
Exactly.
You know, and you want that to rub off on you.
I think
you come
this
here
is
because
more
you got
of a
something
wild
to bring.
Card. Like I think a lot of people look for the you know the natural next step in that kind of progress that's obvious as people are looking at Detroit because. You know, it bottomed out, artists move in, it's like the obvious next like big thing that's happening. Mm-hmm. But I honestly think that in 10 years people will be blown away by Columbus. I mean, I think
yeah,
they
I think so
are,
too.
But.
And like I would just also just think that like America is shifting so much that
yeah.
so much is that you can live anywhere in America.
True.
There's so
yeah.
many things
there
happening
are,
and
yeah.
I'm so happy that like it's not about the coasts anymore.
Yes, me too.
You know what I mean? Like, it's yep. really not. Like, those places are amazing and full of history, and I love those places too, and the people who live there, but it's really about some people like me really need to be in a place where I can build versus...
slot in.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I think, you know, the reason I'm not anti-coast at all, but the reason I am really thrilled about what's happening now is that for the people like I was when I was a kid... who had never met any artist, never met anybody doing create. I literally, when I was in high school, I thought my plan B, which was really my plan A, because I didn't have a plan B, was like, maybe I could fake insanity and they'll take care of me. Like, I don't know what I'm gonna
right,
do.
Right,
like,
right.
So I gotta figure out, and I had
so
no
funny.
Path. I saw nobody like me thriving.
Yep.
And I think that is the amazing thing about it not being so, creativity not being so relegated to the coast.
Well, yeah. And also, like, I think about the role that Columbus plays in, and it always has, like, Ohio has, Illinois doesn't have this, but Ohio does because it's such an old state. We have so many small towns. We have a
yeah.
lot of medium-sized towns, too, and some big cities, but, like, we have so many towns. You can ride your bike 20 minutes between towns, right? All the way up to Cleveland from Columbus or Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just, we have a small footprint state, giant population. But nevertheless, in these rural areas, which are wonderful and
yep.
have great cultures and pop and whatever, but like more conservative, and
yeah.
some of those little boys and girls who are out there are dreaming about the bigger city because
yep.
they know that that's where they're going to find their people and their you know group, and we can be that. Those kids, some of them actually, quite a few of them will end up in New York and LA and other places too. But so many more will end up in places like Columbus,
yes.
and
yep.
it's just. Wonderful to be that for those amazing kids who are,
yep.
You know, yep. colorful in those rural communities, which are a little bit less accepting of that.
Yep, and you know, even talking about doing the Saturday classes at CCAD, mm-hmm. I've literally heard that story over and over. All the people around here that I find that are doing really interesting things said, "Yeah, I did these Saturday art classes at CCAD."
And let me tell you what changed my life about that. It was one of the first places, that and also getting a job, where I was treated not as a kid but a grown-up, or just as a human being, I guess.
As a human,
and,
yeah, right.
Like, my illustration teacher there was not kind.
Mm.
He was really strict, and, like, I loved it.
How interesting is that?
He would, like, awesome. Throw stuff, and, like... I
like
loved
not kind
it
as
so
the best possible
much.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was hard on us. He expected like a lot from us. He
That's
treated
amazing.
Us like we were capable.
Can you say
of
who it
doing
was or
that?
Not?
I have no idea okay. who he was, but
all right.
you know, and it's a long time ago, but like
yeah.
I loved that. I was a little bit scared to go every day, whether it was illustration or painting or any of the teachers and professors that I had there.
You were nervous because you had to like live up to going there and doing the thing.
Well, I sat up straight, yeah, and I was paying attention, and I wanted to make sure.
It took the best of you.
And I would have done that in school if somebody had inspired me in that way, or if I was taking something that inspired me in that way, right? Which I'm sure that some kids
amazing
do, but yeah, like, it wasn't for me. I loved it. I really loved it so much. I loved being, you know, yelled at and having high standards for my work.
It's calling, yeah, that's amazing. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I think a lot of people are familiar with Jenny's now and kind of know a lot of the rest of that story. But one thing I always like to end on is, what are you really excited about now? What are the things that are making you most passionate, most, I don't know if you're like me, I get into like states of euphoria when I'm like in my passion thing and my season of life that I'm in. What are the things that are just like jazzing you up right now?
Well, the thing that I'm like the most excited, the thing that like gets me out of bed that I'm like super excited about, which is like, you know, it's sort of like the last room in the house, the room that nobody ever gets to, an ice cream or whatever. But it's the thing that excites me the most about ice cream, and it's the puzzle of ice cream. Ice cream is a, there's like 20th century ice cream, which is just like stabilizers and an off-the-shelf ice cream mix that you put flavorings in.
Yeah.
And then there's what we do, which is taking milk apart and putting it back together in a certain way, more like a cheesemaker makes cheese. It's really a craft. It's a different thing. And no one's doing that. But it's also because of that very complicated. But because every one of our ice cream, to the extent that it needs to be, is a different recipe. And so we're bringing flavors forward in that way. But there's so much more work that we can do there. And so, and like, I buzz with excitement with that as every year. And right now we're like, we're doing this other improvement with body and texture, and it's all about body and texture. Like, those, that's actually the interesting work going on in ice cream for me.
I was
versus
gonna ask, what's
flavor
good, what is good ice cream, what is that for you?
Well, it's well, I like to call it American hard body ice cream, kind of cleverly, but it's the kind of ice cream that you roll up in a scoop, you know. It's the American ice cream. It's that what you had at a scoop shop when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And you can walk down on the street on a hot day and like lick off of a cone, and it's that ice cream. And I love all ice creams, but like that's my favorite, and that's the kind we make. But it's actually much more complicated than it seems to do. It's very easy to make if you just buy an ice cream base, which is what literally everybody in the entire industry does,
right,
and put your flavorings and chocolate chips in it. But it's a different thing if you want to really like not use stabilizers and thickeners and emulsifiers and just use the power of milk proteins, which is something I discovered a long time ago. And so for me, great ice cream is super creamy, and it's got this, and stabilizers dull flavors, and so flavors should really pop out and be the right thing or whatever. And so we've just redone our strawberry ice cream. Like every year I redo every single ice cream that we do, right, to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's never like one standard recipe that's been my entire career. So this, you know, our strawberry ice cream is just gonna just be absolutely amazing this year.
Is it like finding a new flavor that is like gonna be at one of the flavors? Is that like writing a new song for you, where you're like you're like trying a bunch of things, when you taste it you're like, yeah, like you have that kind of euphoric moment?
Yeah. I mean, and now after almost 23 years doing this, I have so many flavors that we've made that like I want to bring back, that like I almost don't need to do more flavor development,
right?
I mean, there are hundreds that I have, or dozens at least, that I love so much, and we don't have room for them. And so we're also developing, you know, several flavors every year, and then tweaking things forward all the time. So yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, it's fun, and I do love new flavors. Right now we're working on these non-dairy ice creams, which I only did because I had an idea that worked
right
for that is actually really, 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 really good, and I like it as well, if not better than any of our other ice creams. And so I'm really excited about those and what the potential of those are. And that's a new flavor platform for us. And that's been really fun.
All right, last one.
Okay.
Promise. One of the things, I reference you a lot, and maybe, you know, maybe not accurately in this way, but one of the things that inspires me about you is this mission to do the world's greatest ice cream. I feel like I'm always encouraging people to own their purpose, like what their little plot of land on this earth, and just give themselves over to it and do their thing. And if we all did those things, what the world would be like, right? And I think some people would hear the world's greatest ice cream and hear what a small thing to do with your life, like ice cream. You're just going to make ice cream. And then other people would hear it and think, who are you? That's the bit, how, you know, why do you deserve to do such a big thing? I feel like there's a lot of emotion going on with you right now with that. I'm just curious to hear you speak to what that purpose has done in your life, where it's taken you, what you've been able to do because of having this like laser focused like purpose. Does that resonate with you, all that kind of stuff?
I knew early in my ice cream making days that I wasn't making the world's best ice cream.
Right.
And I knew every day that I made ice cream that I was unlocking new secrets to ice cream that I didn't know before. And a few years into it, maybe many years into it, I started to really understand ice cream in a way that I began to make ice creams that nobody had made before. Mm. That even at Ohio State University and Penn State and other places, they didn't think we could pull off. And then it was like, okay, you know, it was just like, it's this, it truly is, you make your, like an idea is like a nugget, it's a moment and that's fine, but it's literally worth nothing. It's worth less, an idea is worth less than nothing because it's a distraction if you don't act on it, right?
Right, it can cost you, yeah.
But, and an idea is one thing, and it's kind of takes you forward a little bit, but the vision is the most important thing. So a vision is an idea when you lens it out and project it into the future and see what it can become and what it can do.
Reverse engineer it.
And also
make
it's like
it happen.
The vision is like, how will this impact people if I do it? If I can do this ice cream, what will this do for the world? What will this do for people? Yeah. How will people use it? And I was like, gosh, ice cream is like a thing. It's like an experience. It's what we do. It's like, you know, see a movie and get ice cream. It brings people together. That's the whole thing. And so the idea became a vision. Well, let's do this incredible ice cream and let's set the standard for American, let's redo American ice cream. I mean, you know, why not, you know, set your vision to be the shoot for the moon.
Yeah.
And then take one step forward every day. Where we get in trouble, I think, with these kinds of visions is when people think that overnight we're going to be the next whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that isn't at all how it happens. It's just one step forward every day. And actually, the less you know about something, the better. Because
right.
You don't hold yourself. I have a much higher standard. My North Star is like, you know, it's like elusive because it keeps getting further and further away in a way, because the more I learn, and it keeps driving me. So the less you know, in a way, when you start, then you just keep starting, and then it's like, oh yeah, and then I can do this. It keeps you really interested and inspired.
Yeah.
But I'm all for setting big goals, big visions, and then, you know, you got your life. You got a life to figure that out slowly over time, but that becomes your, that's the quest that I'm on.
Yes.
That's the reason that I get to have a company, because that's why we call it the fellowship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are all together, our farmers, makers, growers, and our team, on this quest to make this ice cream that the world has never seen, even today.
That's amazing.
So anyway, so it's like, why not write yourself into some kind of a story like that?
That idea is so giant. The difference between an idea and a vision, saying an idea is the world's greatest ice cream. Great. And it's not inspiring. It's not going to move you. It's not going to do anything to you. But when you see the vision of what does the world's greatest ice cream do? It brings people together. It reinvents how they think about ice cream. It changes all these interactions.
It builds
with people.
Pride in America, in something that's unique for America. Because I think American ice cream is the best in the world.
And even
the Italians might disagree with me, but I'm going to put mine out there and to compete. Yeah. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And even starting smaller than that, Columbus. When I go around to places, I say, you know, Jenny's is from Columbus. So, and they're like, oh, really? Wow, yeah. And so, you know, there is real pride in that, and that bigger vision is the thing that get you up every day to push it further, and it is completely different than just an idea.
Yeah, once you secure that vision and it clicks with you, and I was just talking to another entrepreneur last night, and she had done another business before, and she said that now that she has this new business, and like it really clicked. And I think once you get that click where you just know, it's hard to wake up and not have that be the first thing you think about. You know what I mean?
When
that happens, then you have to do it because it will never go away.
Yes.
And so you don't want to be 75 years old and still thinking about it.
Yeah.
In a place where like your body's feeling you and you can't even pull it off now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Man, that's incredible. Do you have a favorite flavor?
I do. It's our yogurt. I love our buttermilk frozen yogurts. And those are flavors that I've worked on forever too. I mean, I started literally the first day in business in 1996. But they're really tart. They're like our version of sherbet. Really, really tart, but also really creamy and really fruity. Yes. Right now we have rainbow sherbet.
I saw that.
Like, it's not sherbet because sherbet is a federally defined product, and it's not the same, but it has that same.
Is the lambic one in that category?
Like the cherry lambic?
Yeah.
That's sorbet, so okay. No dairy in that. Our yogurts actually have a good dose of cream, too.
All right.
And so they're really creamy and really tart.
I think the Brambleberry Crisp is my all-time favorite. I'm insane for it.
That
my
one was a part of a collection we did in 2009.
Yeah.
Inspired by Appalachia.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. It tastes like pie and ice cream at the same time.
Yeah, right?
Oh, man, I'm crazy about it. We're crazy about it. I'm sure that my diet, I love you, but my diet doesn't always.
It's always a balance. You know, ice cream, I can eat ice cream for a meal, but I...
Me too,
you know
I
what
do.
I mean? Like,
sometimes I'll have
I eat a lot of
my
vegetables.
Dinner will be one of your ice cream sandwiches. I'm like, that's my dinner, and that'll be...
That's how I do it. You're a pro.
All right, well, thank you so much. This was the best.
Thank you.
Awesome. This human. She's got so much to give, and I'm so glad that we got to get some of this creative brilliance on the show, and I'm so thrilled to be in the same city as her and her delicious ice cream and this ice cream movement. Go get some ice cream. Go get some Jenny's, however you have to. And taste the brilliance. Thank you so much, Jenny, for being on the show and sharing your story. We all super, super appreciate it. So, all right, another episode down. We are moving right along. This is episode 178. Can you believe that? Holy goodness. all right, anyway, I will be back next week. Thanks for listening. If you're a big Creative Pep Talk fan, there's a few ways you can give back if you feel inclined to do so. You can give us a review on iTunes. You can become a patron and support it financially by going to patreon.com/creativepeptalk. You can go get some CPT merch at creativepeptalk.com/shop, including the new Creative Career Path booklet to help you develop and market your work and break into new industries. Go check it out at creativepeptalk.com/shop. You can also get access to the first 100 episodes of the show and stay up to date when new shows drop by signing up to the newsletter at creativepeptalk.com. Thank you so much. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for the theme music. Thanks to Nate Utesh and the band Metavari for some of the other tunes. Big shout out to my man Alex Sugg for all the editing and other tunes. He's crushing it on that front. Thank you guys so much for listening every week. I'm so honored to be a part of this community that has gathered around this idea of, you know, being a creative, but also still thriving in life. You know, I'm so dedicated to this mission and being a part of this thing with you. And so until we speak again, stay pepped up.